Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Mental Words podcast. Very excited about our conversation that we've just had today. Riding solo on this one, so feeling like a little bit on my own, missing my boy Liam Murphy, but he's working hard at school today. God bless him. Our chat today was with an amazing Australian duo, singer-songwriters, Tom and Jeremy Busby Maru, Queensland locals, the very best of the banana benders on the couch today. They were amazing. I want to say a huge thanks to Tom and Jeremy for being a part of the conversation today. And Blood Red, their new album, fifth studio album for the boys, is out now, streaming wherever you can get it. Please enjoy this conversation with Busby Maru for the Men of Words podcast, where the little conversations can make the biggest differences.
This is the Men of Words podcast, where the little conversations can make the biggest differences.
Might start a little left to center because I do want to talk about a grave injustice from a few weeks ago. A couple weekends ago, I'm sure you guys are aware, Triple J ran their Leica version, hottest 100 of all time.
Yeah.
Absolutely robbed.
Mate, I'm...
Have you had words? What's going on? Does Kingsmill get him on the horn?
Yeah, that is dead set hilarious, mate, because, I mean, we were just doing an interview with ABC Breakfast News.
Okay, yeah.
And
yeah.
while we were waiting, that video popped up of us performing the cover. We were good sorts, though, back then, eh?
That was a ripper. That was an absolute corker.
It was hilarious.
One of my faves.
And just so busy. I forgot about it, didn't know anything about it. And my neighbour texts me, "Hey, man, I'm at number two. Congratulations, you haven't come up yet." I had no idea what he was talking about. I'm like, does he think we're going to get number one in this thing?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I'd like, whatever. We didn't push it or anything. And then someone was doing the same with Jeremy. Yeah, I think a few people got
it hasn't come up yet. It's like, it's going to be in the top 10. It's like,
it's going to be top 10.
It hasn't made it now, I don't think it's going to make it.
Yeah, that's so there was plenty that we, well, like the DMA's one that got number one was like one that was actually like live in the morning of. Because I feel like they've changed, haven't they? Like, like you guys were actually doing the interview.
In the studio.
Tuning up,
so true.
And then like just played like halfway through the chat. Whereas I think the ones that they're doing now are like they record.
Oh, they rehearse and when they bring the thing. Look, to be honest, sometimes they can not work in your favor because you overthink it and you got to get in there. And I mean, look, horses for courses, I suppose. But I personally prefer a cover that's a bit stripped back,
exactly.
A bit deep, you know,
that's what it was, right? Like a version
that
really was.
Sound like. Cover. It's meant to be of your version or something.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that, yeah, I mean, like the stripped back acoustic guitars and harmonies is kind of exactly your lane anyway. So you guys are built for like a version for starters. Because I think back at some of my favorite ones, and it was definitely like, you know, a couple of cats and their guitars, that's for sure.
I was. That's what we would watch, you know, like big artists coming over and just stripping back an acoustic and just belting out a tune you hadn't heard for ages. And I do like hearing though, because it happened to us when we just to choose our Leica version, that the DMA's cover, I'm pretty certain I read after it that whether you like the cover or not, they said we're going to do this and, you know, the Triple J gatekeepers were like, no, that's not cool enough and that you can't do that.
Oh,
and
really?
Like, yeah, so I think they told them to shove it and said, no, we're doing it, and then ended up being number one. And the reason that's I like so that good. Is because that happened to us.
Oh, really? They weren't happy with the Girls Want to Have Fun, yeah?
No, I mean, we weren't. You know, the trendiest, we didn't have the tightest jeans in all of the music industry at the time.
No, that's it. So that's kind of what it's all about as well.
So I was like, they probably were more like, we got to watch these guys because they mightn't be too cool on the show. And we rocked up with our country and Western shirts. And we said, we're going to do Girls Just Want to Have Fun by Cyndi Lauper. And they were like, that's not very cool, I think they thought. And we were like, no, it is. It bloody is. And they eventually let us do it. And it ended up being a big, big part of our career.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, well, good. Stick to your guns. Exactly. Shout out Cyndi Lauper. Legend. Firstly, like, thanks for jumping in, fellas. Super excited for this chat. This has definitely been like, I really wanted to touch on that because, I know those Leica version CDs were Christmas presents for every Christmas for as long as Leica version's been
so
around,
true.
Basically. So I know, that one's been, that's like a little part of the fabric of definitely my upbringing and Liam's I'm sure he's got a Triple J drum tattoo somewhere on him that I just haven't seen yet. Like, he's a diehard. Love being able to have these conversations with musicians and people are so passionate about music. You know, it's such a it's a really, really big part of my life, and I'm a real diehard music fan. And having performed and played together for so long, I'm sure you guys know each other's story sort of inside and out. And I wanted to put forward a little bit of a challenge, like straight up. I know it's early in the morning for a challenge, but if maybe starting with you, Tom, if you, instead of me asking how music has entered your life, I'd love if you'd be able to tell me how music entered Jeremy's life.
Yeah.
And if Jeremy, you can give him a tick or a cross by the end of it, see how he goes. And then we might flip it, and then Jeremy, you can have a crack too.
I mean, I definitely know how.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's, bottom line is he's a Torres Strait Islander, yep, and music is it's a huge part of their culture.
Yeah.
Huge part of their way of life. Growing up, didn't know anything about the Torres Strait Islander culture, actually. And a lot of Australians still don't.
Yeah.
They kind of probably just say, you know, Indigenous Australia, Aboriginals. And they're like, well, hang on, there's Torres Strait Islanders and there's Aboriginals, and they are totally different cultures. And they both got awesome parts of their culture, but one of the great things about Jeremy's is obviously from looking from the outside in is the music part of it. They can all play guitar, bass, harmonies, every instrument. They're just naturally gifted at it. And, so that's how it ended his life. I know that. I'm pretty sure I'm spot on there with the old man teaching you.
Spot on.
100%. Oh, so you're learning from the old man, like it's all
self-taught, all self-taught. Yeah, and nice. I mean, I'd try to explain to people it's not really, it's just something that it is culture. It's actually a part of our culture. I just thought every family did that until my friend's like, oh, I don't play guitar. I was like, you're normal.
It's a funny realization you have for different stuff like that when you're a kid, isn't it? I remember having like getting to maybe second or third, you know, grade, and a teacher asking something along the lines of like, oh, who's been camping before? Maybe we're going on school camp for the first time or something or other. And my hand shot straight up because I've been camping every weekend since I existed, you know what I mean? Like we were, you know, that was my old man, like his, you know, his family, we were always camping, heading out. And there was all these kids that are like never like pitched a tent or like slept in a tent before. Yeah. And I'm like, what is, I just couldn't compute, didn't make sense, you know? Yeah, that's it. 100%. And then what about for Tom, Jeremy?
Right, Tom, look, although we're clearly two different cultures,
yeah,
you know, I'm a black fellow, Tom's a white fellow, very similar in a lot of ways. Tom's from a big family, youngest of eight, and I guess a lot of his influences were from his older siblings.
Mm-hmm.
If you met Tom's dad, you go, okay, I can see where you got your front man.
Yeah, right, okay,
stage presence from, because he would just walk into a room and just start singing.
That's true. Yeah.
Front man in
and
life.
And you just, everyone would just watch him. Just watch him. It's like, oh, who's nice. Here? Just like, and Tom's got the same, thing about him from his dad. And I guess your influences were a lot of singer-songwriter. Oh, yeah, got a few differences. I think Raymond had a singer-songwriter and someone else
country,
was
Yeah, Raymond was right in the country.
Kylie Minogue, your sisters.
Sisters in the top 20 countdown.
Yeah.
The girls singing.
Yeah, okay. So brothers. You're getting like
it's
the
weird me telling
from
his
the
story and him telling my story. I've heard that story.
Yeah, it's so true.
Tom's heard that story 1,000 times from me. So this is great.
Yeah. But yeah, Jeremy, I always would talk about that. I talk about, you know, my brothers and my siblings, and they all got different tastes and gravitate towards all of them. And then I'd, you know, at one point of time, probably with the time when I was ready to write, I was really hooking into what one of my brothers was listening to. It was Bruce Springsteen and Tom Petty and Paul Kelly and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that's when I was learning guitar. So then thankfully that's kind of, you know, my inspirations. But then I've never actually actively thought about my old man being a big part of my musical passion, I suppose. And it's spot on, the front man thing. And I was not within my own family as the youngest. I just sit and I'm quiet. You know, I just
Were you the youngest of eight?
Youngest of eight.
Wow, okay. Yeah, and there's a lot of rungs on that ladder.
There's a few front men in the family.
Yeah, true.
Tom's not the number one.
And we all know that bands do really, really well when there's multiple front men as well.
Yeah, yes.
That's never a controversial thing.
Oh, so true. Yeah, you can only have one. Jeremy doesn't want that part.
Yeah, fair.
But you're right. And I know my place in the family, and I always say, no, you know, as you're growing up, I'm probably more of the front man of the family now than I ever was, but I'm still not the number one, and I like to kick back and it's quite relaxing. I don't have to do that. But then with my group of friends, I would be, you know, my brother Michael and my sister Melissa, shout out to those guys.
Yeah.
They were the front men and women of our family. we'd all just let them fly. And then I think almost individually everyone else would go to their group of friends and take on Michael and Melissa's role with our group
of
friends.
Yeah, so, wow, okay, yeah, yeah.
And that all comes from my dad, my old man, yeah.
There you go, yeah, it's all upstream. How crazy. And then for you two, when do you guys cross paths with guitars and whatnot and I guess like, yeah, Busby Maru sort of start to take shape?
I'd left Rocky with Rockhampton Boys.
Yeah.
And I didn't know Jeremy. We probably heard of each other. I was a couple of years older.
Yeah.
But I'd left and I went to uni and I'd come home on the uni holidays, as you did, coming back from Brisbane to Rocky. And by this stage, I'm playing and writing songs and singing in some bars, doing some solo stuff on the weekends. But Jeremy was playing in Rocky with one of our mutual friends was the singer of his band.
Yeah, okay.
And we'd all go and watch him play. And, yeah, it was big time, you know, all the girls and the singing covers.
We were killing it.
Killing it.
Kay Sand and Gambler.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
Sister Hazel.
Yeah, you know what the people want. You know what the people want.
We used to think we're big time anyway.
Yeah, it was great. Well, they were. I would, you know, with the crowd there, go, look, can I get up in between your breaks and play?
Okay, you know, nice. Yeah,
my
yeah.
slow love songs and put them to sleep, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what I did. And, yeah, it was awesome. It was great. But I did notice, particularly at that stage, that, God, it would be pretty handy if I had someone to help me sound better. And I'd watching Jeremy play, like everyone would come to watch Jeremy play on the guitar. He's,
yeah.
Obviously, if you've seen him play, you'll know why. He's freakish. And,
mm-hmm.
The timing was great. At some stage, I ended up coming back to Rocky for a little while to save some money. I'd finish uni and just gave him a buzz and said, mate, I'm going to go overseas, but I want to put all my originals down. Can you help me? And we'd never written or played together and we started writing back in my dad's shed at the back and it was heaps of fun. Writing songs together was like, wow, this is sounding awesome. They weren't. Actually, they were sounding horrible, I suppose. But for us and our friends, it was like
– Hindsight.
It was new. Well, that was the start. It was the start of something special. And the chemistry was instant. And then we started playing at the pubs just to – really, it was just to actually – I'd ring up the publican, mate's dad. Can we play? We'll bring the crowd. And we don't want to get paid. Just give us free beer. And can you book my flight home back to Brizzy? Because I missed it. So I was hungover. And that's pretty much how it happened, eh?
Yeah.
And, yeah, so then – yeah, then we – you know, it just started snowballing and – we didn't think we'd have a career in it. We just loved it. And that was probably a big part of it because we loved it. And we just put the hours in. So much fun. And 100%. Yeah, then we started getting some good calls.
How good. And was your foray overseas, did that go ahead?
No.
No, okay.
I just went over for a little few adventures here and there.
Yeah,
to sort of,
okay,
you know,
yeah.
Whet the appetite. But, music was just that, you know, bit of a dream job that even when it was all happening and even when it became real, it was like, is this really going to be my life? Like,
yeah.
Surely not. This is, you know. And
especially, I think that like, you know, your guys' dynamic of, and obviously, I mean, you know, there's the full band's in there now, but the, you know, two guys with guitars, it really, like, I mean, I guess you think about every pub up the East Coast, you know, on a Friday, Saturday and Sunday from 6 to 9 p.m. is two guys with guitars, you know, like doing those songs that you said, Jeremy.
That's true.
And so like that is, I mean, that is fun and that fills people up, you know, and like how good, like power to them because it's nothing I love seeing more than a little acoustic set on the weekend. A
little Sunday session.
Exactly. It's what it's all about. But then, yeah, I guess for it to, yeah, I guess maybe it's hard for people to like visualize it taking that next step where all of a sudden it becomes like about you guys and about your songs that you're writing and you've really got this opportunity to say something because, yeah, I guess there's not really a lot of room. Like I guess there's not really like a lot of distraction with the bells and whistles of production and stuff. What really seems to come back to is like your songwriting and like the acoustic guitar, which is, you know,
spot on,
kind of like pop music at its purest at this point. So, yeah, that's a really like – that's such an interesting element. It reminds me of had like someone – smarter than me telling me about Mumford and Sons. I'm sure you know these guys. They have their like the campfire test for all of their songs, which is basically like you can put as much on it as you want and you get as many, you can get a 76-piece orchestra in the background and stuff. But unless the four of us can sit around unmiked and just play this thing and we enjoy the song, then that's not it.
Man.
And you guys are there.
I didn't know they had that, but that we've accidentally do that. That's
our
thing.
Definitely do that. They got a banjo though. That sounds good in everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything down, four-piece harmonies too. That would sounds help. Good.
But no, we do that, and we the songs actually they're born around those moments. Really, whether most of it's always back home. You know, I'm always going home and to Central Queensland. We go to Keppel Island, Five Rocks, or just you know, even if it's a you know after a big night, and then we're back in a motel room, then. It eventually, if Jeremy and I are on at the same time, then the guitars get to us.
Yeah.
Then it's like, well, let's test it out. And we always, you know, no matter how slippery we get or you can work out what songs connect and when. And generally, they, yeah, it's a great test. It's a really good test.
100%.
Family too. Like family won't lie to you.
No.
Like your kids are probably the most innocent.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, yeah.
It's like, oh.
Is that true?
Is that yours? Yeah, it's brand new. It's getting released next week. Oh.
Well, maybe keep that one out of the set, you know.
Oh, well, too late now. But and then there's a song they'll go, oh, I love this one. And they'll be singing. It's like, how do you know this? Like, oh, I listened to it twice already. And it's like,
well, didn't you say your daughter the other day, his teenage daughter, was like, is that yours?
Yeah.
It's actually good.
It was like,
it's actually good. Nice.
My father is kind of cool still. Yeah. Like, a bit old, man, but it's all right.
How good. That's awesome. Yeah. Nah, keep you honest. I like that. So, yeah, I guess like coming to the music, like I was saying about you guys sort of having that stripped back, simplified version of songwriting and music in general, I guess by comparison to the bells and whistles of modern music production, is I guess I see that as like quite almost in a way a bit of a vulnerable thing because, yeah, like you really are presenting your music and presenting the songs that you're writing in almost their purest form, kind of as they were, you know, as they were cooked up around the campfire in the hotel rooms, as you say. Feel free to correct me on this, but optimists, self-accused optimists, glass half full kind of fellas and a glass half full kind of outfit being Busby Maru. And there's definitely, like some pretty clear, like, you know, we'll say heavier themes and you know, you guys broach a lot of like topics through your music that are obviously so important. And I am curious about your guys' relationship with mental health and you guys obviously knowing what we're doing here as with the Mental Words. You know, it's what we're doing, what we really want to push forward the conversation, how mental health has factored into your life, if it had at all, because, you know, to speak from my experience really briefly, I was somebody that really questioned mental health from the get-go, like until I was about 27 and I had my dip and I had my first real, like, you know, like low, you know, it was definitely guilty of people, you know, like thinking that it was bullshit in some fashion. And it took a lot of fucking growing up on my behalf to come to that realization. And now here we are. So yeah.
Totally. And I don't want to speak on behalf of Jeremy, but I'm pretty certain we were exact same growing up.
Yeah.
We did have good lives as well. I want to also question 100%. That. So there's other people out there that have got, you know, just been dealt the raw hand. But I was happy for so long. And you mentioned that we're, you know, the optimists.
Yeah.
But the older we get, I think with this album in particular, we're talking about some really serious and topics and some sad things and touching on mental health as well. But our message, and maybe it's our message to ourselves, is that no, it's no matter what, it's still optimistic at the end of the day. Okay, so no matter what we're going through, we've, you know, and that I think that's almost like a bit of a pep talk for ourselves, to be honest.
Yeah,
because the older I get, I'm actually becoming more cynical, which I hate, but I'm becoming more cynical about. I used to be so positive and happy, and I am a positive human. I know that, but there's just so much shit going on.
Yeah.
I've got four kids, and I'm juggling life and all that, and it's hard to actually sit back and go, "Man, I'm playing rock and roll. I do this for a living, and I've got a beautiful family." But it's hard when you're in the moment to, you know,
to zoom out.
You know. So, I think the older, I was exactly like you, just like. Just be happy, everyone. It's easy.
Yeah.
You know? But then I had a brother also that struggled a lot with mental health, you know, diagnosed bipolar and all the rest, and seeing that firsthand, I couldn't understand that. I thought, nah, it's, he'll be right. Like, but then, the older I've become, the more that I've had to carry real life on my shoulders, with more I've had to be the protector of the kids and things, and juggle and keep the wife happy and tiptoe and all that. I've struggled. It's an ongoing. I'm not saying I've struggled to the point where it's been hard, but I've been well aware that I've been a lot less positive than I wish I had been.
Yeah. Growing up in Rocky too, go back a bit further. Like when we were kids, if one of our mates, say we were a teenager and someone said, "I'm struggling with mental illness," they would think you're a nut job. And
yeah, that was the thing, right?
In a straitjacket or something. So I mean, I'm not sure. I'm sure it was like that in most places.
But 100%.
I know a little country town like Rocky was a bit.
It wasn't
that long ago. You know, I'm talking 10 years ago.
No, exactly. This is the thing, isn't it?
Have that outlook. But I mean, more recently, you know, one of our good mates, Brad Cox, who was also on the road as well. He's next door neighbour. You know, his wife come home and just found him in the shed, and at the exact same time, Cox, he was on tour. And his tour, he was raising funds for men's health.
Yeah.
And for him it was such a cliche, and it wasn't until the reality, he's like, mate, what sort of hypocrite? You know, he said a couple of times, he said, I felt very hypocritical because I was out there doing my thing. Yet I didn't
actually know that
to my next door neighbour, and he couldn't tell me that he was struggling, and that affected him hugely, and it affected everyone, you know, myself and all his mates around him. But it's just like, man, it's so real, and sometimes we just it's just there, and we might talk about it on a podcast or go and do a gig for men's mental health or any sort of mental health, but it's so real until it hits home. It's still hard to get your head around.
100%.
Sometimes, hey.
And you're right. Like you talked about that, you know, the attitude that we had to it when we were younger and just that total lack of understanding. And that was maybe a little more and a more innocent version of that. But then, yeah, like getting into your 20s and growing up a little bit more and seeing how present it was in the world, but still not understanding or having that cynicism, having that, you know, being skeptical about it. It's like, it's really tricky because, I've carried a lot of guilt around that in particular, especially starting this, because, you know, this kind of came out of, you know, Liam and I, we were working together and we had, we were both really struggling, best mates for like 15 years and just hadn't said a word to each other, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like Liam had gone through high school with these issues of bullying and body image and all these things that I'm just like, are you fucking serious? Like I had no idea.
Yeah.
Because
to you it mightn't have seemed like a big deal and he's tough enough to just brush it off, but it might just can build and build and you don't know what's going on in someone's brain.
No, that's exactly it. So yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, this has been such a big inflection point in our lives because, I mean, the podcast is a point for us to consistently like check in with ourselves, check in with other people, hear other people's stories and that has just been invaluable. And yeah, I can imagine, like you were saying, like you guys, you know, being willing to write these songs and present these songs about these topics, does it kind of serve that purpose for you as well? You guys are able to use that as a bit of a,
But it doesn't, we don't know, when we're writing songs, particularly for me as a lyricist mainly, but something that's happened at the time or a story that's relevant or current when the melody comes up. So I don't go out to try to write, a song about that. But obviously there's, you know, particularly with this album, there's a song called Crying on it. And, you know, the overall message is, it's a tribute to the resilience for farmers and people out in the regions and remote areas who get, everything Mother Nature throws at them, and the fires and the droughts and the floods, and yet still get up at the end of the day. But really that was born out of a story from one of our mates, you know, out bush, tough as nails, and the first person you'd probably think that wouldn't believe in mental health. Yet he had met married with young kids, got bad thoughts because he couldn't handle it. And one of his mates actually, I know we didn't know the guy, but ended up you know, a terrible story where he killed himself because he couldn't handle that pressure. And mm-hmm. here is this guy who was supposed to be, in our eyes, like, nothing bothers this yeah. guy. Nothing would bother him. 100%. And so that was just an idea of that, like, wow, even that I don't know, it stuck with me. And probably because of the time of writing it, I was, you know, deep in having young kids and like, what? Whoa, I'm not this person, you know. But so it's okay to be that person struggling a little bit because no one tells you, particularly for those who haven't had kids yet. No one, I got the best advice I got was, you know, 39 weeks, 40 weeks, right, the baby, you're pregnant with your first, your wife's pregnant with the first baby and you're so pumped about it. No one tells you about week 41. And that's when you got to go home and go, well, hang on, what do you mean I've got to take the baby home? We haven't slept yet.
Like, yeah.
Tough shit, mate. It's just life.
One in, one out, mate. Yeah, like, go on.
No one can tell you about what happens after that. So it's just this drastic change and it's almost mean. You see people getting engaged, married, and they're so happy. They're having their first baby and it's the best news. My nieces and nephews are ringing up. I'm like, that is the best news. But deep down you're like, I won't even tell them because they'll find out. But it's so exciting. But
yeah, when you're about to jump in 12, comes, like the first of 12 rounds. Die. Like, yeah, yeah.
And it's like this, like, holy truth, what? Whoa. And then it's not till the next time you're going, you're hanging in there, mate. Oh, yeah, but oh, you know, don't worry. I can't explain when it'll happen for you, but eventually you accept it. No, but does it get easier? No, it does not get easier. But you accept it.
Yeah.
At some stage, some earlier than others. And then, yeah. You know, yeah.
It's like a rewiring, isn't it? Because I got a young daughter, first one. And 16 months, so it's just like one and some change. And, yeah, I just like in my head I'm just going, every single thing Thomas just said has literally been the last like 16 months.
Yeah, you're right. It's right.
It's – look, and it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because like that thing of like exactly what you're saying about, oh, you know, like it's a pretty rude awakening and it's easily the steepest learning curve you'll have, surely. Like, it definitely has been for me. And it like there's just these moments of like unparalleled joy, like that you just can't top. It's like, and it'd be these little innocuous things maybe to someone else, but you're just going like, she made this little noise this morning, and I'm like, that's the or like, you know, she's just started walking and she says run when she walks. She just goes run, and I'm like, that's amazing. Yeah, it's just the cutest shit I've ever seen in my life. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, you're not running, mate, but good try. And but then, you know, like, coupled with that is, yeah, these like, you know, like strain on relationship and just sleep deprivation and all this sort of stuff. And I like, and I, you know, for somebody who considers himself pretty aware of their mental health, like I really struggled. I didn't realize how badly that I was struggling with it. And I was, you know, like I'm sure you guys have heard of like postnatal depression and it's really common with mums and stuff.
I've seen it, it's
way more common with men than I realised. And my shrinks like has been, is, you know, diagnosed is a weird word, but like she said, like that's what I'm going through. She's like, you're in these episodic things of postnatal depression. And I'm like, why the fuck am I depressed? Like I've just had a kid. Yeah. It's supposed to be the most amazing happiest thing in life. You know what I mean? Yeah,
I think exactly. Also your relationship with your wife used to be so fresh and young. Let's go to dinner. Let's do that. Let's sleep in. And then it's not better or worse. It's just different. And then it takes you a while to understand that. And then you see them becoming mums and how they care in a different way. And it's, you have more respect. And it's, I don't know, everyone goes through their own journey. But the other strange thing is when you first have children, everyone tells you, you wait to the moment that they come out. Oh my God, your life's upside down. But I remember, you know, feeling bad about it because everyone's like, hey, how does it feel? Yeah, good. But I'm like, I don't know that person. I actually don't really know that human. But then what happens is every single day, the longer that you know them, the more you love them. And I even hear Jeremy now. He's got teenage and adult kids now.
Yeah, wow.
And we were saying the other day, Jeremy's just like, holy shit, my son is just my best mate now.
Oh,
yeah, is that just an amazing like transition into like being, well, like peers in a way, obviously.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And still, like my oldest is 19 and don't get me wrong, I still have to pull his head in.
But I wouldn't expect any less at 19.
It's funny now, listen, the boys will be in the bus and they'll be laughing.
Same age as you and I when we met, just so side note.
Yeah, wow, that's a trip to think.
Isn't it?
Leave that vase alone now, it's like, For fuck's sake, mate, what did you do that for? Use your...
Exactly. Messaging's a lot more concise now. Yeah. You have to tiptoe around it.
But it is nice when you're at the footy watching him, you know, play A grade, and you're with your mates having a beer, talking. It's like, hey, Dad, we're going fishing. You get everything ready.
You're capable. Exactly. You made me up when the boat's in the water.
I'm having a beer.
Oh, that is awesome. I can't wait for that stage. I'll be too old, though, I reckon. So it is true. You know, that journey of struggle, it doesn't stop. And people above me as well, particularly my older brothers and sisters, they keeps – or what I hate is they were like, oh, you wait till they're teenagers. I'm like, you've forgotten what it's like to not sleep, mate. Right, at least with your teenagers you can sleep. Now, nah, it's a different type of worry. I'm like, don't tell me. Just let me experience it. And I'm on my head, no, I'm not going to have those struggles. But I suppose the clear message is it's not easy. But the benefit is you just gain best friends and more people to love. So, yeah.
I think that's it, isn't it? Yeah. That's such an amazing way to put it. So good.
I've got a 10-year age gap between two of my children. 10 years. He won't hear this anyway. He slipped through. But the difference between handling that
straight through to the keeper. Yeah.
Straight through to the keeper. It was... at the time, I was like, "Oh, my life's ended. This is
no." Terrible. Because what happened is Jeremy had all these kids, and he was past the hard yakka stage.
Yeah,
and I didn't probably appreciate, because that was when our career was taken off. He had the young kids, and I didn't care. I didn't know what it was like. I'm like, "Come on, mate, we can do it. We can go everywhere." Exactly.
Add another 20 shows to the tour. Come on, let's do it.
And then fast forward, it was our third album, and I've got two young kids, and I'm like getting up with my eyes hanging out my head and all this, and he's just sitting back out.
Yeah, exactly.
Now it's your turn.
Then
he started joining the party with me.
Yeah, okay.
Accidentally, apparently, but go on.
But what was I getting to?
Yeah, 10-year age gap.
As a parent, I was stressed. I was stressed when I knew he was on the way. But handling it, hands down, easy. Mm. Not one bit stressful. And as a baby, like he slept easy. He was settled.
Totally. No.
You know that first baby. You know, you're bathing him in a little tub. Now you just hold him in the shower.
That's so true.
We were talking about because with our first one, and my partner's a nurse as well, and so I don't know, she kind of has like the burden of knowledge of like, oh, well, you know, like unless we do this one really specific thing, like, oh, she might get, you know, some crazy disease that one in 5 trillion people get, you know. It's like she knows every fact, to one person this happened. And like, I mean, thank God she does, because like she's the brains of the operation. But Even in like 12 months on, we're kind of laughing at about how strict we were with ourselves. Now it's just like,
mate, you'll look back.
She's off and we're like, you know what? Fuck, she'll catch herself. Like,
first child syndrome.
First baby syndrome. Everyone's got it. And it's actually the fun part, because there's no other ones running around to bother. It's all focus on one baby, you know?
We went somewhere
a little while ago, the first day I was on the tour, and I get a call from my brother. He's like, hey, man, I've got 4 kids, and the youngest, a little boy, 3 girls and a boy.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man, just letting you know, don't panic. I'm in the car, him and his wife are in the car on the way to hospital with Herbie, my youngest. He's like, not even 2. I'm like, huh? He's like, it's all good. He's just split his head open right in the middle, like 4 or 5 stitches right at the forehead.
I'm
like,
zipper, what? Yeah.
What's going on? He went, yeah, I've just told my wife to meet us at the hospital, but it's all good. We got him. He's not crying. I'm like, okay. And then I literally just went back to the gig. And I was thinking, man, can you imagine? I remember when my eldest split a lip open, and it was like we went to 3 different hospitals, plastic surgeons, all this. Like ringing everyone. Like it was like, calm the farm. It's just a stitch, righto.
Yeah.
Nothing we can do about it now.
That's it.
You know,
isn't it? Yeah.
But, you know, you just, yeah, you're, I suppose you know that you're okay at it, and they're not going to die. It's all right, you know.
In doing some research, I heard you guys talking about a bit of a rule that you have around your like writing and your creative time. Obviously having, like, you know, 4 apiece, and having family obviously being, you know, such a, the main part of your lives. Like when you're home,
Yeah.
I think that's a really hard line for people to draw, to be honest, especially when you're talking about like a career and a career of music as well, which is not an easy thing to come by, let alone maintain. And yeah, I'm interested, like I'd just love to hear your thoughts on that, like how you guys keep home and how you separate the creative stuff out outside of that.
Well, I feel it's quite easy.
Okay.
I mean, it's harder for us. It's blanking at the times. Now we just, our managers know that nothing goes in the calendar on the school holidays. If they get a call to say, we'll give you $1 million to a gig, they just don't tell us.
Yeah, right.
They should tell us, though, if it's $1 million.
There's a line somewhere.
Yeah.
Richard Branson wants you for his birthday party. Yeah.
Don't scare Richard Branson. If he wants to come and ask us, yes.
Kids can have a day off. They can come with us.
Yeah, that's it. Put them on the jet.
Leave him at home for a couple of days.
But it's actually quite easy. Once I'm home, I'm not even thinking about music.
Yeah.
Well, it's important to note as well with us, we tour non-stop, and and when we're not on tour, it's promo or we record. When we're together, it is, you know, it's full on. So everyone always asks us, how do you do it? Because I live on the Gold Coast and Jeremy's in Rocky. It's, you know, 9-hour drive.
Yeah.
How do you do it? Well, when we go home, there it's clock off.
Yeah.
And we got other jobs at home. We are like bathers.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? School lunches, school pickups, school drop-offs. Sports runs.
Yeah it's full time in itself.
It really is, you know, and both like all our partners work as well. So like the being able to understand that when we're on the road, we just get it done.
Yeah.
You know, and when we're home, we get that part done. And yeah, and school holidays is a big part of, I love school holidays. Where I know a lot of other parents are like, oh, school holidays, what are we going to do? But for us, it's like, cool. Well, I'm not going to get a phone call here. Or if they do call us, they know they're bothering us. You know, like, but can you, you know, I remember getting, I was angry at Easter. We had something released and I've got no reception where I would go camping.
Nice. And by design.
But just enough to get through.
That's the worst. Then, there's a little bit. Yeah.
I'd rather absolute nothing. And so I'm constantly walking up to do this. I'm like, I'm not relaxed. Like,
yeah.
I thought we had a rule, but it was pretty important. We had a song out. So, so I was juggling that.
Well, it is that balance. And yeah, and good on you for like making that clear, because I feel like people would find that hard to do in a lot of situations. You know, like we interviewed Keita Alexander. I don't know if you heard of her.
Yeah. She's
incredible.
Great.
Like amazing, amazing singer-songwriter. And she had this really kind of formative experience, because she was like, had kids with her partner on like really young. And that was kind of like just as her music career was kind of on the up. And, you know, unfortunately for her and for a lot of people, like for a female in that position, that can often be like a door slammed shut on a career, you know. And yeah, but she kind of like with a lot of conviction kind of did exactly
she's
what you
come
guys
back
are doing.
Full on. I was explaining this to Jeremy the other day, because we got signed maybe just before Keita at the same record company. And so total different music, but we were watching sort of from afar and knew you were the surfer girl doing well. And then obviously went quiet a little bit because she had a baby and her husband's career was doing his thing as a surfer. And so I was sort of just following. And I personally was like, I wonder how you're going to navigate this. But now seeing her come through, I was explaining this to Jeremy. I'm like, man, she's coming out of the blocks even harder. And I think she's going to, this time around, it's going to be really successful for us.
Yeah, so super amazing.
It is, yeah.
Definitely like, I mean, yeah, if you guys got 45 minutes in the car on the way to the next one, the Keita Alexander episode of The Men of Words, definitely worth a listen. She's amazing.
Great.
She's such a legend. What's something that you guys are able to do for yourself?
Well, it would be different for both of us. As I said, Jeremy's kids are older and he lives up north, so you've got all that, just the ability to actually
it's just nicer up north.
Yeah.
FNQ, exactly.
Oh, but more the point is probably something you do for yourself is actually go camping and go to the islands with your kids.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it's easy for me. I'm always out in the water.
Yeah.
Okay. Or I'm playing golf with the kids. Even when the kids were younger, I've always made a firm thing. It's like, I'm not going to let the kids stop me from doing what we would do anyway.
Yeah.
So if I'm going camping, four kids are coming.
Yeah.
There's always lots of people around. So I'll make it like, sometimes I'll talk to people and go, oh, we can't come. We've got the children. It's like, bring them.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've always made it.
It's very aspirational, Jeremy, like, honestly.
If I'm going fishing, life jackets, kids are all in the boat. It's I think it's the way I was brought up too. Like,
yeah,
mum and dad always did stuff where 10 boys, 3 girls at one stage.
Wow.
And we went on family holidays all the time.
Yeah,
I don't know how on earth they did it, but
the whole bus.
They made it happen.
That's probably
my me time is doing fun stuff with the kids.
Yeah,
look, you've got so a pretty good life too. You can sort of do what you want.
That's great.
Yeah,
I'm Jerry's got it on a string. Yeah, good.
He's, yeah, he does.
Rocky's where it's at.
Yeah, that's it. I actually, and I'm not doing it at the moment, but I'm trying to get back into it. I got to get up and exercise, and I had a period for a couple of years I was doing it and I was feeling really great. And going into a tour, which we're about to do in a couple of months, if I go into that not mentally feeling good, I'll start again in 3 months. And then I, you know, end up drinking more, eat more, look worse, feel worse. So just getting up, just got to get up before my kids. They're all babies, so they wake me up pretty early. So but definitely that. I would love to say golf as well. just don't do it enough. Like, I love to just go play on my own.
Yeah. It's a big time commitment, golf.
It's a long day.
Yeah.
It's not just nipping down having a game of squash, you know. Although I'd love to play squash. If anyone on the Gold Coast wants to play squash and you're at an amateur level, give me
there
a buzz.
There you go. All right, shout out. We've got a couple of crew on the Goldie. I'm sure someone's dig out a racquetball racket and a squash ball.
Jeremy and I used to play on the road every now and then.
Oh, really? Squash was the one?
Because you can get into this habit. Particularly, I know I do. Jeremy's out of it now, but it's more like, yes, I'm on the road. It's sacred. The time is, like, particularly we're doing a promo tour. You don't do any. You don't have late nights, but you work all day, and then you get back to the motel, and it's Uber Eats and Netflix, and it's just like, wow.
You don't leave your room.
No, I do not.
You wake up feeling like a fat slob.
Yeah.
So easy, though.
It is, and then after a little while, it's almost the second week of promo now, and I'm a little bit. I'm done now. I'm done with the Netflix and Uber. I'm getting a bit lonely.
Yeah.
You know, so. You know, a bit of that time is good, but, without all the racket around me, after a few days, I get a bit wobbly. I'm like, what?
Fair enough. Yeah. And you're right. Like, it's the balance, isn't it? You know, there's that, like.
That's the key word.
You know, we kind of, like, contradictory in the way we want, like, I would love some alone time. But then, like, the second you've had an inch too much of fill me up. Where's my people, you know?
Yeah, I had 2 days of alone time, and that's why I flew to Melbourne. We were in Rocky doing promo on Friday, and I had the option to either stay about in Rocky, and I could have seen family and friends and. And because it was so intense, the promo, I was like, let's just get me straight to Melbourne and I can just recover for a bit. We've got a lot on.
Yeah.
Day one was unreal. I just walked around. I went to movies, actually.
Oh, nice.
That was unbelievable.
Barbie or Oppenheimer?
No, Oppenheimer. I actually fell asleep. What an idiot. I was that
You
relaxed.
Fell asleep in Oppenheimer.
It's such a good movie, too.
That's a rave review from
It was. Don't get me wrong. It was magic. I was shattered. Yeah. And I was hoping. I shouldn't have seen it. I should have fallen asleep to something else. But anyway.
Yeah, that's it.
But then the next day before Jeremy rocked up, I was walking around in circles. I was like, I need to be busy now.
Yeah.
Let's get back to promo or get me home.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, look, gents, we're kind of rounding towards the end of the conversation and I do and appreciate you guys being so open and forthright about it. It is really reassuring that people can come in and have conversations, you know, with fresh faces about mental health. That's really kind of the goal of what we're doing here. And one thing that we love to try and do when we finish up, and it's a little bit of a challenge, comes from this amazing crew called the Resilience Project. You guys might have heard of those guys, Hugh Van Kylenberg, the Imperfects podcast. Yeah. They do amazing work with young people around fostering resilience, mental health and stuff. Anyway, one of their superstars, this guy Martin Heppel, uses any opportunity he can to tell his mates that he loves them, you know, without, you know, being half a case deep. is that something that you guys struggle with, or how does that sort of sit with you?
I definitely
guys?
Struggle with it.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, but I think that's my family. We're so tight.
Yeah.
But my dad told everyone he loved him every step of the day. Every human being you ever met on the street. Love you, son.
Yeah.
But my mum's the opposite.
Yeah, okay.
She's real, you know. Yeah, so, mate, and I've probably adopted that more so, but Yeah, I do often hear other families and all that, even just on the phone, tell people, girlfriends, all that, that they love them. So I'd love to try to bring it in a bit more.
Yeah, 100%. No, I totally agree. And very similar, to be honest, with mine. Yeah, where ours is like our family is kind of – it's a work in progress now still, you know.
Yeah,
like
we do,
we're still
yeah.
kind of getting there, which is interesting. Jeremy, what about for you?
Half case deep is easy.
Yeah. I think that's the universal
so
truth.
It's true, though. It's like, you know, you tell them you're crying and you tell them how much you love us. I do not, like, growing up, my dad, you knew that he loved you.
Yeah.
But he would never say, I love you, son.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
He never said that. But I think that's why I always say it to my kids, every phone call, every time I see him, all right, I love you, mate. Like, I love you, mate.
Yeah.
But to your mates, it's different. I mean, very rarely if I'm sober, we'll just hang up from be mates and go, oh, well, I love you, mate. Well, it's just something I haven't really thought about, but now you've mentioned
it. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think there's a lot of value in it. And, you know, a point that people make is like, if you were talking about, you know, like Tom, if you were telling someone about Jeremy, you'd probably have no hesitation to someone else saying, I love Jeremy. He's an absolute legend.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. I do that all the time.
This is the interesting thing, right?
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, that's kind of part of the stigma that we're trying to break down, and something that, you know, my partner in crime, Liam's been working on me for a long time as well, because he's amazing at it.
Well, it's a tough one. One of my sisters found out she's a bit sick at the moment.
Yeah, wow.
And we've all, the family's just rallied fully.
Wow, amazing.
And then we're all like, hey, I love you. We love you. I mean, I know that everyone's probably told her that they love her 1,000 times now, but my thought was, why? That was hard for me to do then, because I didn't want to just say, hey, I love you just because you're sick. Yeah. But that's how it kind of feels.
It takes some point of intervention, doesn't it?
Yeah. You're like, should have just said that, you know, life's too short. 100%. Should have said it all the time.
Well, that's it. And look, just to fill the cups up before we head out and go about the rest of our day, I'd love if you guys were able to take the opportunity. You can throw the L word in there if you need to. It's totally up to you. But I guess what's something that you would love to say about Jeremy, to Jeremy, or like what's something that you love about Jeremy and you want to just like throw a little sunshine his way?
Oh, mate, I reckon you're an unbelievable father and a role model for me with your relationship with your kids, and I always talk about that, and for that I love you.
Jeez, that feels good. That's good on a Tuesday. That's good on a Tuesday morning.
Teary too. Gotta be careful. Oh, we get emotional,
isn't it? I know.
True. That does work, though, doesn't it?
No, absolutely.
Get the heart going, won't it? Yeah. It's amazing, Jeremy. But yeah, for you, mate.
Look, it'd be easy to say likewise, but you're one of the funniest guys I know. And the way you interact with your brothers and you know the relationship you had with your dad was incredible. And right, so I love seeing you suffer with the girls. I look down and laugh sometimes. But, there's not too many people that can say they have mates, especially working relationships, that don't fight very much. And because of that, I love you.
How good is that?
Oh, beautiful.
Fellas, that is probably just about the best place we could possibly leave that. Honestly, just want to say a huge thanks to you guys for jumping in. And, yeah, again, being willing to, like, put this conversation forward. And I know we didn't speak for a single second about Blood Red, but I will say this, it's too cold for a windows down road trip at the moment in Melbourne, but the second it warms up, playlist done.
Yeah.
It's very, very cool, fellas. And yeah, looking forward to it. And you guys, will you be like doing an East Coast run, getting back down this way?
Yeah, totally. We've got a big show at the Corner Hotel.
Oh, hey, the Corner.
Yeah,
love it.
Old stomping ground. I don't know when that is. I'm going to have a guess and say 2nd of September.
Nice. Tell you what, if you've pulled that out and it is the 2nd of September, I'll be very impressed.
Wouldn't that be good?
We're going to fix that in post. We'll don't worry good. About that. Easy done. Awesome. Well, gents, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks
thank
for
having
us. Perfect.
This is the Men of Words podcast, where the little conversations can make the biggest differences.